Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott. My role here is to keep Jonathan company, especially at night.
I hadn't noticed. This week we're talking about the future of procurement, specifically Gen Z, which is the future of procurement, and how Gen Z can have a future in procurement.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
And neither Paul or I, as Gen Xers, are qualified to speak on such things. So our special guest today has literally burst into the spotlight in recent years. She has been working in procurement for 3.5 years and has become quite a procurement influencer to the Gen Z community. She describes herself as a ProcureTech trailblazer and has just launched the Procurement Trailblazer series of online panel discussions. She also describes herself as Gen Z in procurement. Please welcome to The Procurement Show, live from Riga in Latvia, Lada Samarska. Lada, welcome. It's an honor and a privilege to have you join us on The Procurement Show today.
Hi, yes, it's great to be here.
I want to jump straight in.
Yep, I know what you're going to say.
Do you?
Yeah, because okay. I did the American Gen Z thing.
Oh, I'm a Z. Do you say Z, since you're obviously the expert, do you say Z, Z?
You can call it whatever you want. I think Gen Z is the most general form.
Gen Z is the most. So I was right.
Okay.
So let's
you
start.
Always are.
Lada, why did you join procurement?
I can't say that I have an answer because I didn't join it intentionally. I think many people didn't. I think it's a very common story. About 3.5 years ago, I joined Procuro. And when I was joining it, I didn't know it was a procurement company. I thought it was an IT company. And I was like, oh, you know, great. I'm going to go work in IT. It's going to be very exciting. And then I get there and I start learning about indirect procurement and direct procurement and all of these new words. And I found it very exciting. I think we don't talk about procurement enough as youth. We don't learn about it early enough. And I think I got very lucky to learn about it as early as I did. I found that there is quite a lot of challenges, things to figure out, and I like a good challenge. So that's why I'm still here.
Taking a look, I mean, you studied finance and economics at the Stockholm School of Economics. Is that where you learned how to become a procurement professional? I mean, you mentioned you weren't intending on doing it. Can you describe to us your learning journey?
I didn't learn about procurement from my university. I talk about that a lot, which is quite odd because I did study finance and economics. You would expect that's the best major to get into procurement because that's how you can understand the business. We, in 3 years of my education, had one lecture on supply chain, which focused entirely on bullwhip effect and did not mention the word procurement once. I am very passionate about getting procurement into more university programs because, again, I just got lucky. And when I joined Procuro, again, started learning about procurement, found it very exciting. I liked the concept that everything around you has been once procured by somebody, everything. And learned a lot from our customers, from our clients. And then when I realized that I need sort of a broader network, I went on LinkedIn, started asking questions about how does all of this work? And that's how I ended up being who I am now on LinkedIn, still asking questions, still getting to learn from people. But I would say that most of my education has been working hands-on with our customers, with the procurement tech sector, and then learning from CPOs, heads of procurement, procurement managers, everyone I can get my hands on from LinkedIn.
It's interesting that you mentioned that procurement's not in universities enough. I think that's a big problem. And if you want to study procurement at a university, it's a very specialist thing. We'll come back and talk a bit more about that later on because I think it's worth unpicking that. But before we did this, I suddenly thought, how long have I worked in procurement? And it's
110 years.
What?
110 years.
No, but it's a long time, which makes me feel really old. But how can procurement engage Gen Z and the next generation of talent? Because that's the key thing. I mean, that's why we wanted to have you on today, because this is about the next generation of talent that's going to be powering procurement for the future. But what does procurement need to do to engage Gen Z?
I have a lot of these conversations with both procurement recruiters and just heads of departments, I think the problems are quite simple, but not easy. So first thing is visibility. If people don't know it exists, it's really hard to get people engaged. So again, I got very lucky that I learned about it mostly by accident. But then if I had studied about it at university, not as part of a procurement major, you have to learn about procurement before, you have to know about it before to pick procurement as a major. But then part of business, economics, finance majors, I think it would have quite a good effect on attracting people in. And then I think the second problem is not having enough internships in procurement where you can actually come and see what that looks like. I did a different podcast a while ago and we discussed how there can be very different roles in procurement. So again, from the outside, people just hear about procurement manager, let's say. That's what you aspire to be, a procurement manager. But then if you think about tangent roles in supply chain, you could be in category management, you could be in procurement tech, which is IT, which sounds really good to the youth. You could market it that way. And I think it's also very important to communicate this breadth of different positions that there are and different skills required, because I think also from the outside, a lot of people look at procurement and think, oh, I have to have good math skills because it has to do with money. It has to do with buying something. But then you need so much more than that. And you can be a great communicator and calculate most stuff in Excel, or, well, hopefully somewhere better than Excel. But still, it shouldn't limit you. So yeah, I think the biggest problem is communicating about it to the youth more. And then giving them opportunities to try it as an internship, for example, during their studies.
I think that's a really insightful thing, because first you got to know that procurement exists. And
yes,
we're just not very good at that at all in procurement.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
The mobile app development company Chartboost tasked their procurement team with buying a giant 3-meter tall dinosaur for its San Francisco office. They thought it would brighten the place up. It's still there today and lives with all the developers. It even has a name. Buster.
I like that name.
Yeah.
Have you ever been involved in procuring a dinosaur?
No, but I've worked with a few.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the first choice for advanced procurement and negotiation training.
And you make another interesting point about bringing the skill sets with you. Actually, I've always said some of the best procurement people are the non-procurement people. That either they're good with maths, they're good with people, they're good with engineering. So you don't have to know about procurement to be really good at procurement. But yeah, absolutely. First, we've got to tell people that actually we're here and it's fun.
I'd like to go into this a bit more detail, because you're very passionate about procurement. It's absolutely clear to see that. You've obviously taken a lot of time to research the function in general, but it's not a perfect environment to work in. So what would you say are the key pain points within procurement, and what do you think needs to change?
As Jonathan mentioned at the beginning, I have just started the Procurement Trailblazer series. And part of preparation for our next episode, which is going to be about procurement tech, I've been interviewing CPOs, heads of procurement, procurement directors, trying to understand better what their pain points are. I want to create something that is actually useful to the community, the content. And something that's come up in my recent conversation, I did about 25 of them by now, is that procurement is often viewed as a second thought function or as a support function instead of a strategic partner, let's say. So a very common case is where a company understands that they need to manage procurement somehow before they have a procurement function at all. They will go out, purchase a system, let's say they will purchase Coupa or something like that. And then before implementing it, they understand that they don't know how to do that and go ahead and hire head of procurement. And then you're basically locked into a solution that might not be suitable to your needs, that might not suit your process before you have analyzed what the situation is, what your process should look like. And I think that stems from this very common case where procurement gets involved too late in the process, where people don't go to procurement first. And I think that's the biggest issue. So highlighting the value of bringing procurement on board early on, understanding how we can bring strategic value And I think that also is part of this communication issue. We need to talk about what we do. We need to market ourselves better to the organization internally and externally as well to attract more people into the function. But internally, I think that's one of the biggest issues.
Yeah, and I guess if we can market ourselves better, we can engage with the business better, we can understand the requirements for implementation.
Yeah, because you use the term strategic value, but also people forget that procurement is capable of creative thinking as well.
Yeah, well, some of it is.
Some of it.
Some of it is. But Lada, you're passionate about procurement tech. And so I wanted to ask you what your view is on procurement tech adoption, because right now it feels like we're just swamped. It's everything everywhere and everyone's rushing around saying, whoa, what do I do? So how do you see the procurement tech landscape and how do you see it today? What do you think it's going to be like in the next, say, 5 or 10 years as your career progresses?
Very interesting question. I think procurement tech market is to be watched right now. So as many people know, in 2021, 2022, there was a boom of venture capital investment in procurement tech. And it's about now or within the next year that we're going to see where that led us. Usually venture capital firms, they take about 3 to 4 years to see whether their investment paid off. So we are nearing that point. And all of those hundreds of solutions that are on the market now, if I am not mistaken, there are estimated to be about 5,000 procurement tech solutions.
Wow, that's a lot.
So yeah, it's impossible to keep up. Stop trying. That's advice number one. Advice number two, we should see some mergers and acquisitions happening within the next year or so. At least that's my perspective. And there are two schools of thought. First school of thought is we're going to see these mergers and acquisitions and then some market leaders are going to emerge. Although there are some now already, but then there have been new categories that have popped up. So we're going to see, for example, in orchestration, we're going to see somebody who's going to take lead. Different school of thought is that this is just the beginning. So we have, let's say, venture capital firms have invested into the solutions. We have seen use cases expand. So we see you can now get a solution basically for anything. And we will see them converge to reflect market's opinion on the best use cases. So which problem is the most painful? Which problem should be solved? And then we will again see more firms pop up trying to do that better than the leaders that are now. So let's see how that goes. I think it's a good sign that we are getting recognition and money poured into procurement tech solutions. The only danger is that once you get venture capital backing, you have to focus on meeting your investors' interests, growing at a certain speed. And sometimes that comes at the cost of, let's say, listening to your customer pain point, because you stop building the product for the customer, you start building it for your investors.
Yeah.
So that's a danger. And another small thing, again, stemming from my conversations with CPOs, many of them are concerned now about implementing a new solution because they don't know whether it's going to exist within 2, 3, 5 years. So that's a big consideration on the market now. Yes, there are market leaders that have been there for 10, 15 years, those same Coupa, et cetera, big players. But then for companies that are younger, especially among the enterprises that tend to be run by people with more, let's say, years of experience, they tend to be more conservative. And I think that is stopping us a little bit in the progress of procurement function, because you have to take some risk. Somebody has to be an early adopter to see this use case through, to understand whether it works or not. But not so many people are ready to take the risk.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that. CPOs just hanging back, not ready to invest in the tech. Partly, I think, for the reason that you said that it perhaps is going to change in 2 years. The other thing that I've heard is people saying, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what I should invest in because that's nice and bright and shiny. It'll do something. And so is that. And then how do I take everybody with me?
But then it leads to a very stagnant marketplace, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It goes back to the old phrase, nobody gets sacked for buying IBM.
Yeah. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Hello. Your negotiation co-pilot powered by AI.
Oh, yes.
Ruby guides you and your team to plan your negotiation. And because it's built on the famous red sheet method, you can be certain of the best outcome. And if you need help, just ask Ruby.
I'll help you.
Or access the onboard learning.
Don't forget.
I haven't forgotten. I'm saving the best till last. Because Ruby can then do the negotiation. Using AI and our 20 years negotiation experience, Ruby is one of the best trained negotiators you will find. If you want to win, role play with Ruby.
Yay!
To find out more, just search Ruby Negotiation or visit positivepurchasing.com.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
Now, you've mentioned technology. You've given a good oversight about technology and early adopters, something that's definitely making its name on the scene of every industry. I'm going to go there.
Don't go there.
I'm going to go there.
Hold back. Is it? I think it's too early. It's too early
I'm going to go there. Amplitude integration. No. AI.
Oh, AI. There it is. There it is.
AI.
Right there.
Sorry. For those of you who are playing Procurement Show Bingo at home, that one is worth 50 points. So AI, how do you see AI and how do you think it will power your future role in procurement? You mentioned 5 years just a few moments ago with regards to procurement technology. I think things are moving quicker than looking 5 years ahead.
Yep. Now the speed of this evolutionary cycle, if before it took, let's say, 20 years from one significant breakthrough to the next significant breakthrough, now it can be months. Sometimes it can be weeks. So with AI especially, we've seen that ChatGPT came on, about 1.5 years ago? Let's say publicly. Now we have companies that have adopted very advanced large language models. So things are moving very quickly. Another, again, thing that comes up with conversations with the CPOs, with heads of procurement, is that these use cases have to be proven first. So it's understandable that AI has great potential. There is a lot that it can do, but what can it do well? And under which conditions, what is required for it to work well? In one of the conversations that I had more recently, the CPO that I spoke to, he said that he talks to a lot of providers. And one of his questions is, for example, if we take contract processing. So for example, you create some sort of chatbot that you can ask to analyze your current contracts and tell you if there are any that are expiring within the next month that are over $100,000 or more. And he says, what if it doesn't read some contract correctly? It expires or it renews, which is sometimes worse. And I don't get an information about that. Can the provider guarantee that it will be processed correctly? And he says, when I go to providers and ask them for some sort of guarantee, because that's a big risk, they usually refuse to guarantee, and understandably so. But that's till it's reliable. Procurement deals with large sums of money. And depending on the industry, some of these contracts can be critical. If you think about automotive, for example, where stopping the production for a minute can cost you hundreds of thousands of euros or dollars. It's a big risk.
Yeah.
It's into something that the provider cannot back, that provider refuses to give guarantees on. But then again, yesterday I had a different conversation with a CPO that is very excited to implement AI. He said that it's on their list for next year. So they have a roadmap of what they're going to do. They're looking more at a chatbot to help requesters with the requisition fill out and processing. So depending on the use case, risks are different. The level of risk is different. And I think that influences the readiness to adopt that solution, to try something new. Me personally, I am very excited about the technology. I don't know exactly where it would be most useful for us yet, because again, so many different applications, but it definitely should be considered. You should definitely be looking into it. But I am a big believer in solving a problem you have, not implementing a solution because it's shiny. So if you have a problem, let's say with contract management, for example, then look at that problem and think how you could solve it. And within the range of those solutions, consider AI, but don't just go after AI because it sounds good. I think that a good measure of whether we found a good use case will be once mid-sized companies start adopting it. Because now a lot of adoption is driven by enterprises having to report on their innovation. So, we have these billions of dollars in R&D budget, and we need to report that we have implemented AI this year because this is the hottest thing. At that scale of business, they can run it as a pilot somewhere in the corner and still say that they have AI. because they must show that they're innovating. But for mid-sized, small and mid-sized businesses, since they don't have such a large budget and usually the human capacity to be doing stuff that is not adding to the business directly, with small businesses, harder because they don't usually have as much data to go off of. So it's not always applicable for them to implement AI. Once I see mid-sized businesses implementing it, I'll know it works.
Yeah.
You make such valid points.
Absolutely. I mean, there's two really strong points there. You know, have AI to fix a problem, not because it's shiny, but also you mentioned the CPO that is actively having a strategy for how they're going to implement AI, which I'm not seeing, because I'm seeing people, as you say, just going out there buying it because everybody else is buying it. Hey, we've got to have AI.
But this is what happens when you've got marketing driving an innovation rather than an innovation being driven.
The fact that I know what you mean.
AI is fallible. We forget. We think it's the all-knowing, it's perfect and it's great, but it's just as capable of getting things wrong as the three of us are.
Yeah, you in particular.
And with me in particularly, I am not an AI though. I am real. I make all my own mistakes.
Yeah, I know, on this show. Let's talk about sustainability for just a moment, because anyone that knows me knows I've been banging on about sustainability for 20-something years now. And finally, it seems like the procurement world has woken up and said, oh, maybe we need to be doing that.
I thought you were going to say the procurement world has woken up and said, oh, Jonathan's right.
Well, that would be nice.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine that? Yeah. But the thing that I'm acutely aware of, it feels like sustainability is something that, to be blunt, it's been left for Gen Z to sort out. And I want to explore what needs to happen to make procurement more sustainable and how can tech help? What do you think?
We are now seeing a lot of movement towards sustainability in the past year or so. I think that is related to the deadlines that have been set. For example, a lot of companies have committed to have green in a part of supply chain by 2025 or by 2030. And that is driving change now. I think that the only reason for procurement to change anything is when it becomes impossible not to. So this is part where I support legislative movement a lot. Mm-hmm. Once it becomes illegal, once it becomes impossible not to be sustainable, not to be green, that's when we will see most action. Of course, it doesn't always apply again to enterprises, depending on the size of the fine. Very sad nature of business is such that we don't do anything that is not absolutely necessary. Mm. If you can do without it, that's why I think it took so long for the sustainability movement to go forward or to progress. Because yes, there is a very active, very vocal minority that ideologically believes that it has to be sustainable, it has to be green. Yes, we're seeing now it's becoming more obvious, the climate change, not just to the scientists, not to the scientific community, but to average human. You see, the weather has changed over the past years. There are many more acute cases around the world.
Yeah. And it is a sad fact that it takes legislation to drive it. I've seen a couple of companies that are making the choice to do it, but they're few and far between. And even those companies struggle to keep that momentum up when things get tough. So the sad reality is, I think it is legislation.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Juan Morales in North Carolina, who writes, I was recently asked by my boss if we had a contingency plan with our suppliers in case of supply disruption. Mm-hmm. We do not.
Okay.
And it would take a lot of work to do this across all our suppliers. My question is, or rather Juan's question is, do we need to do this and how can we decide which suppliers to do it with?
Right, great question. So risk management is something that companies do not do very well. And at a company level, you really need to be thinking about all sorts of risks. So risk to the company, but also there's risk within procurement in terms of if you're implementing a new category strategy, the risk of that not being fulfilled or going wrong. But the other areas of risk that we look at is risk with our suppliers and risk in the supply chain. And we need an approach to do that, but it's all about prioritization because you could end up having armies of people just doing this. So it's about figuring out across the suppliers that we do business with, which are the suppliers or the areas of suppliers where we have the most risk. So we do two things. We think about where there is the greatest likelihood of something going wrong. And if that thing went wrong, what is the severity of that impact? So clearly, if something's very likely that's going to go wrong, but it's not going to have much of an impact, we probably don't need to be doing much about that. But if something is going to perhaps have a high likelihood of happening and a high severity if it does happen, that's what we need to be tackling. But the chances of it happening, low likelihood, are small, but yet if it does happen, it could be catastrophic. It's those situations where we need to be putting contingency plans in place. So this is a simple risk matrix. You can find it in all of the books that I've written, but you're effectively thinking about the different suppliers, the different supply chains, the different areas of supply, and prioritizing based on likelihood and severity. And then you're either going to mitigate that risk, in other words, you're going to reduce the chances of it happening, or you're going to put a contingency plan in place. And if you have that process to approach it, you can prioritize where you're spending your risk assessment effort with.
Great question. Actually, I really like that topic. I think we should do a show on risk management.
On risk, I think, yes,
risk
we should.
Management. If you have a question for Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
The other thing that really bothers me is the commitments, the difference between a hard target that a company's going to meet and an ambition. You know, and everyone says we're going to be carbon neutral by 2030. Our pledge is to be carbon neutral or something like that. It's an ambition, and ambitions can change. And unless there's legislation, we can't hold companies to account. My dog has pledged to be carbon neutral by 2030.
Really?
And if
is that because of all the methane gases?
Well, if you can imagine the smells it produces, not going to do that.
It can. It's not just the dog in your household either.
I blame the dog.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add to the concept of this?
I loved Jonathan's comment about unless it's a hard target, because it sort of reminds me of these New Year's resolutions. It's a very good aspiration to want to lose 10 pounds next year, but wouldn't you be more likely to do it if you didn't do it, you were fined 10 million euros.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You have to.
You make a very good point.
You have to take into account.
Yeah. But also to go back to what Jonathan was saying, with regards to legislation, we can hardly rely on governments to keep their targets in place. So if they change things at a whim, how can you expect corporates not to do the same?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just trying to still figure out in my head whether I'm an X or a Y.
You're an X.
Am I an X?
Yes.
So you're a Z. We've already spoke about this.
And I'm an X.
How do you see your career and your future as a Z person in procurement? And where do you want to go with your career? But also expanding on the question, what's the viewpoint of your peers in the industry?
As we're talking about all of these challenges in procurement, I think my main goal is to pick which problem I want to go after. Again, as a very young person, which I am 23, a lot of people get surprised when I say that. I still have a very wide selection of challenges that are possible to address. There is the procurement tech market we're talking about. There is the sustainability. And I am trying to understand where is it that I could have the most impact. I really enjoy what I've been doing up to now. I think one of my favorite things about procurement is gathering the community and facilitating this education exchange. What I'm doing on LinkedIn, what we're doing with the Procurement Trailblazer series. So that's what I plan on doing now. Then for a lot of my peers in procurement, there are so many exceptional people right now, under 30, under 40, that are making incredible change in the field. So I think one of the things I have seen so many very young CPOs, very young heads of procurement recently, and I don't think that was possible a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And the fact that my generation and, you know, people slightly above me in age are getting trusted with these functions, with managing all of the procurement for an organization or just indirect or just direct, that's a sign that we have something to give.
Yeah.
There are skills that Gen Z possesses. There are some points of view. There is the readiness for tech acceleration, for tech exploration, let's say, that can drive business forward. And I think for a lot of people, again, we just need to see this path between where you join procurement and where you can make change. I think Gen Z, and I talk about this a lot, we are very vocal with our choices. So I will not overstay where I feel not welcome, where I don't feel like I can be bringing change, where I don't feel like I impact decisions. And I think that's a very good thing for our generation. So I think we're going to see more Gen Z joining the companies that are working towards sustainability, that are working towards ethical practices, etc. I think if before money might have been enough of a motivation, let's, as they say, the sin industries used to be very, very attractive. Mm-hmm. But with Gen Z being so determined, being so engaged in sustainability, fair trade practice, etc., I think we're going to see companies working towards that be supported more and more. And hopefully that will be enough to drive change.
Well, I'm excited by everything you said and the future of Gen Z, because that is the future of procurement. What concerns me is I have jackets that are older than you.
I don't know why you could be upset. So I usually think about that from a position where I still have so many years to gain experience and I already have insight.
Yeah.
So I think there is a lot of way to go.
Yeah. I'm really excited by everything you're saying. And I guess to sort of bring this to a conclusion, what would you say to a room full of Gen Zers who were uncertain of what their career path was going to be? What would you say to them about what procurement has to offer?
Procurement is the perfect place to learn everything you need to know about business. If you are a business major, if you are a finance major, if you are an economics major, if you like both, well, public sector, public procurement is a whole different thing. For me personally, I am more a private sector girl. If you want to learn about private sector, go into procurement. If you want to understand how the business operates, if you want to understand how things get done, go into procurement. I think it's the best place to gain the right skill set. I think it's the best place to take on responsibility, because you do get, people are very likely to help you, to gain traction, to gain an understanding. It's a very accepting community. People want you to grow. People are just like here. They're excited about you. They want you to succeed. And so I think it's just the best place.
Fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant.
As we record this, it's a Friday, and I most certainly am looking forward to the weekend. Are you looking forward to the weekend? Will you be getting a takeaway?
Sorry, why?
Well, the reason why is I like to bring it round to our top three takeaways.
That nearly worked.
That nearly worked.
Plow on.
Yes, so what are your top three takeaways?
First of all, I think Gen Z has a lot to offer to procurement, as we talked about it before. And one of the things, we as a community have to be ready for change that is about to come. As we talked again, Gen Z is very vocal with our decisions and very tech driven. So as Gen Z gains more and more managerial positions, there will definitely be change more towards tech, more towards fast, I don't like the word, but let's say it, agile processes. And we have to be ready for that. We have to be ready to witness that. Second of all, procurement tech market is a mess and it's quite heated. And again, as I said, let's see what will come of it within the next year. I think 2025 is going to be a decisive year for procurement. So let's see about that. And third of all, I think we need to do better on marketing procurement. And that is what's standing between us and having exceptional talent, having exceptional positioning within the organization and world where people know what procurement is. So those are my top three takeaways.
That's brilliant.
Good takeaways.
Thank you so much. Lada Samaska, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Procurement Show. I just want to wish you the very best for what's going to be a stunningly bright career, I'm certain.
So much. It's been great to be here.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Capella is the latest in digital category management. Capella makes creating great category strategies easy, strategies you can trust. Because Capella's intelligence is built upon 5i category management, trusted by companies the world over to deliver results. Which means when you choose Capella's guided mode, you can be confident you'll get the best possible strategy. Or switch to advanced mode and work the 5i steps. All with AI's helping hand. Make digital category management something you can trust. Search Capella Category Strategy or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more. Capella, the guided category strategy creator.